go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Welcome to Between the Trenches, episode 15, week 2's recap show. And we got the full family here in the studio once again. Rob Marsiglio, our producer, is here. Rob, how you doing?
Wonderful. Very happy.
Joined by my co-host, Mitch Sanderson. Mitch, how was your weekend?
It was good. Not the football part, but the rest, man. It's pretty good.
And you have me as well, Dwayne Turner. And Mitch, you're right. This was such a crazy weekend. I mean, we had a brutal week picking teams.
Yeah, we only differed on one pick last week, but I think we were combined like maybe 4 or 5 wins.
Yeah, I'm just looking to go 500 next week, to be honest. I mean, it's been a rough one for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's week 2, and this is what happens always early in the season. We just don't have enough time, or we don't see enough of these teams early on week 1, and we think we know. See one game, 60 minutes, we think we know what's going on.
Yeah, everybody, you always overreact to week 1, and then you make picks accordingly, and that's kind of what happens. I mean, you thought that the Titans were going to be able to demolish the Browns.
I just thought there's no way that Johnny Manziel can win that game. And, like, he goes out and completes 8 passes and 2 bombs to Travis Benjamin. That's all it takes. So
that's all it took. Yeah, exactly.
And it was crazy. You're absolutely right. So crazy that, in fact, this is the first time in NFL history that the Raiders, Browns, Jaguars, Tampa Bay Bucks, and Washington Redskins all won on the same day. And we didn't. I think we had all those guys. We both had all those teams losing.
You know what? A bit of a surprise, but I think it's fair to say that that won't happen again. And knowing my luck, next week it will all happen again, just because that's how it works, isn't it? So, what do you want to get into first, Mitch?
Well, let's talk about some of these teams that these 5 teams in particular that did win these games. We got to look at were these flukes or were these someone? Some of these teams have started off pretty hot.
Okay.
My first one to go, I got 2 here that I think could be real deals.
Okay.
These 5, the Oakland Raiders and the Jacksonville Jaguars both came up with big wins against good defenses at a time where we thought, these guys wouldn't be able to pull off much offense. The Raiders come out with 37 points on the Baltimore Ravens. Now, they didn't have Terrell Suggs, but that was pretty much all they were missing. We were pretty wrong on the Amari Cooper. We thought he'd have his hands full with Jimmy Smith all day, but he did just fine.
But the thing is, opposite side him, Michael Crabtree had a great day as well. I mean, he had 200-yard receivers in Derek Carr. They were my dud from last week, the Oakland Raiders in general. Derek Carr obviously didn't play, and Matt McGloin was challenged to lead that offense to some points against Cincinnati, but... Yeah, I did have high expectations for the Oakland Raiders, led by Jack Del Rio, going into this season. I thought that the defense would have been much improved. Now, mind you, this wasn't much of a defensive struggle.
No.
37-33 in that game. Plenty of points galore. I had high hopes. I thought that, there was going to be a bit of a, I don't want to say triplets in front of Rob here, but you got Derek Carr, you've got Latavius Murray, and you got Amari Cooper. I thought that was the beginning of something great there, and this, who knows? Like you said, I mean, these are teams that we didn't expect to win, but this is a good sign for this team. Really great sign. I'm not saying that this is a playoff team, but I'm saying that this is a team that's taking the right step forward and can build on this going forward.
Yeah, we thought these guys would be like a more of a defensive powerhouse if they were going to be good this year, and they were able to put some points up on the board. But the Jaguars, too, they find a way to beat the Dolphins. Dolphins play what we thought would be an easy schedule to start the season, the Redskins week 1 and the Jags week 2, and they come out 1-1. They almost lost that first one to the Redskins, too. And reports after the game that Ndamukong Suh, the newest $100 million man for the Dolphins, ignored all the play calls, which is pretty crazy that a guy just went, no, I'm just going to do my thing. He's good as he is. You got to think his teammates must be getting frustrated with him. His coaches, are going to be frustrated with him. But give a guy that amount of money, he's probably going to feel like he can do what he wants.
You know what? Ndamukong Suh, he's been – controversy just follows him everywhere he goes. Obviously, there was plenty of it in Detroit. Now he's carrying it over to Miami. It's tough. I mean, to be honest, when this game, obviously Jacksonville won 23-20, and I thought this would be a close game. I didn't expect Jacksonville to win, but I did expect it to be a close game just because Miami, the way they played against Washington, I figured it would go again. You'd have a similar formula. My takeaway from this is Blake Bortles. I thought Blake Bortles had a great game. Last week, he only had 4.0 yards per attempt, and I think to improve on that and get to 8.3, that was something I thought he needed to do. And he had no turnovers. That's huge for him. Quarterback rating of 89.8. You know, that's impressive. So I'm impressed with Blake Bortles. That's my hugest takeaway from it. Whether or not this is something, like, I'm not quite sure that they can follow the Oakland Raiders and take that step forward, because this still is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm not quite sure that the defense is where the Oakland Raiders are, but I'm impressed. I'm happy to see them win a game in September.
I just got to ask you guys one question about that game. How bad of a sign is it for the Dolphins that Ryan Tannehill was their leading rusher on the day as well? That's never a good thing.
That they refuse to make Lamar Miller the star. Well, week one we saw them giving all the short yardage carries to Damian Williams. You know, this is a weird. You're absolutely right. That's a big problem for the Dolphins, because they want Tannehill to use his legs, you know, within the system, get a couple carries off a read option, but not to be their leading rusher. You know, that's definitely one of the keys to beating them this year, is get Tannehill moving around and not throwing the ball.
You know what? Lamar Miller, when he was taken by the Dolphins and they kind of fit him as that all-feature back, I was kind of hesitant on that, just because, like, he doesn't have the build to be able to maintain that kind of a workload. And on top of that, the Dolphins ended up losing Brandon Alberts to a strained hamstring. So not to have their best guy on that offensive line at left tackle, that's going to be a problem going forward. So, I mean, I think he only averaged like 1.4 yards per carry.
1.4, yep.
Ryan Tannehill is a talented passer, maybe not the deep thrower that we expect him to be, but he's going to have to rely heavily on those intermediate guys to be able to get this offense going, because I'm not sure that the running game is going to be what they lean on this year.
Yeah, and moving on to another couple teams here that had some, like, really surprising wins. Cleveland Browns, you mentioned it. I was big on Titans last week, and I still, you know, I don't really know how these guys were able to win a game with, you know, Johnny Manziel completed eight passes. They literally had three drives that worked. They scored a touchdown on all three of them, and it got a punt return touchdown. And, you know, Mariota still had a pretty good game. He outpassed Manziel by a lot. But those three Titans lost three fumbles, and that really killed them.
This is crazy, because Mariota, this is the second week facing another Heisman winner in Johnny Manziel. And you're right. But the thing is, Johnny Manziel kind of had that same formula set up for him in the offense that Mariota had last week. You know, limit the pass attempts and then just kind of rely on everything else, the running game and so forth. Mariota, I know you said that he passed for a lot more yards and had more on the day, but a lot of that was in garbage time and them trying to catch up, because Browns were up 21-0 early.
Yeah, they were in catch-up mode the whole game.
Right. So that's the issue. So you're right, though. Marcus Mariota, he didn't turn the ball over again, so he's already had, that's six touchdowns, zero picks already on the year. He did have a fumble in this game, so that's unfortunate. But I think this has to be encouraging for the Browns. I mean, obviously, I know you're not a fan of the way Manziel plays, but I think that they're starting to use him the way that he knows how to play best. We saw the little scramble and that the little pivot turn and then the deep throw to Travis Benjamin. I think that's really how they're going to be successful. And I'm hearing early reports that McCowan is probably going to end up being the starter anyway. So
yeah,
if he's healthy, which, I mean,
you know, this isn't how they wanted
rotating.
To develop Manziel. The plan with Manziel this year, I think, was to let him learn from McCown, from a professional, for a while, and bring him along slowly, and they were forced to play him game two. So yeah, I heard the same report that, yeah, McCown won't lose his job due to injury. The other team, though, that we mentioned, my New Orleans Saints, I wasn't too big on them, but I kind of thought they would beat the Bucks, who, I don't know, we talked, they're not going to be a team who necessarily wins a lot of games this year, but you're going to see flashes like this. I think this is a bounce back game for Jameis Winston, who had a rough week one, and we were there's a lot of worry about him. How is he going to take the losses? He seemed to take the losses pretty well early on.
Yeah, the New Orleans Saints don't look unbeatable at home anymore. Wouldn't you agree, Mitch?
Hey, they are. I want to say they're like 2-8 at home since 2013, season. Since December 2013.
Wow. Yeah, it's Jameis Winston. Yeah, he had a great game. I mean, he had a rushing touchdown. He had a passing touchdown. Over almost 10 yards per pass for this guy. So, yeah, he had a huge bounce-back game. They kind of limited the amount of passes that he had. Only 21 pass attempts completed, you know, 14 of them for over 66.
Should be mentioned, too, that Mike Evans did play in this game, but he had made no impact.
Exactly. Vincent Jackson was the one who was probably his main target. So, good for him. Yeah. No, it's a good win for the Bucs, a nice encouraging thing, because we all overreacted and thought that the Bucs were going to be this, you know, dumpster fire, but they bounced back in a big way to get a big win over these New Orleans Saints, who fall to 0-2, and questions abound now.
Yeah, and the Bucs kind of segues us to our next session here. The Bucs lost their big week one hero, Austin Seferin Jenkins, who had the big 107 yards and two touchdowns in week one. He's going to be gone for at least a month for them, and there were several key injuries that went on this game, week. Two big quarterbacks going down. Tony Romo has an injured clavicle. Jay Cutler is going to be out a few weeks. Anytime a quarterback, starting quarterback, goes down, that's huge news for any team.
Yeah, Tony Romo, I think it was on a scramble play, Rob, and I think it was Jordan Hicks, the linebacker for the Eagles, that ended up landing on him. And as soon as I saw the hit, you saw him still laying down there. And I remember we were watching the game together, and I told you, like, that does not look good.
No, you know, it was very valiant of you. You said this is not how you wanted to see it happen either. And that's big, big coming from an Eagles fan for the Cowboys starting quarterback, that you have at least a bit of sympathy for the situation that he's in. So I appreciated that, and so did Cowboys Nation.
Hey, Rob, you know what? I like to see good quarterback play, and I only saw one quarterback doing that last Sunday. So,
well, what about Whedon, though? You can't forget about that.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he was the second best quarterback on Sunday. That's right.
Yeah, and that's right. Now Brandon Whedon's going to have to start games for the Dallas Cowboys moving forward. And that, you know, historically hasn't worked well for teams.
Cleveland and Dallas.
Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
But you know, we don't know what to expect. I think it's going to be tough because they also lost their all-purpose guy, the guy that's never hurt, Jason Witten.
I don't know if they're going to lose him. I mean, Rob, you can speak to this. This is a guy who has only missed one game in his career, and that was in his rookie year. Guy played with a lacerated spleen. Now, the report, it's two sprained ankles and a sprained knee, correct?
That's exactly what it is, yep.
I'm not counting him out. I don't know what you think.
I think that if he wants to suit it up, you can't put him on the bench. You got to give it a shot.
Unbelievable. And this is all compiled on top of the fact that Dez Bryant is already out. So you're talking about their two best players, possibly one of their other best players in Jason Witten being out. But the thing is, the Cowboys kind of have built up this lead where they have two wins overall and two wins in the division.
Yeah.
So Eagles, Redskins, and Giants, they're going to be doing is catching up at this point. So 8 weeks.
They still have the great offensive line, and that's been the key to, I think, for a lot of quarterbacks in the past. We saw the one that sticks out to me was Matt Cassel when he came in to replace Tom Brady back in 2008. Brady went down with an ACL injury, and Cassel had to play all 15 starts anyways.
Right.
And they had a great offensive line, and he had a great year. They won 11 games. They didn't make the playoffs, but
right.
You know, they made Matt Cassel look like an NFL quarterback. And he had, at that time, he had not played a game. He didn't even start. Matt Cassel didn't start in college.
Exactly.
At quarterback. So that was, you know, that can be a big thing. I think that offensive line is going to be really big. They play the Falcons and the Saints the next 2 weeks. Falcons have a good defense, but the Saints do not. So that's bodes well for Brandon Whedon.
And just to touch on the Jay Cutler injury, I mean, Jimmy Clausen will be stepping in. It's a hamstring injury for Jay. And I think it was on a run play, too. It was like on one of the few read option plays that, for whatever reason, they've installed in Chicago. So it's unfortunate for him. We're going to see a big drop-off. I know that people love to, you know,
harp on Jay Cutler.
But you're going to see a big drop-off with Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, I thought he was playing pretty well against the Green Bay early. Like, we've mentioned this on our last show, I think. Jay's going to make some bad plays throughout the game. but he's also going to make a lot of good plays. It's just for those like two or three bonehead plays needs to cut down on, and you know, he had done. I think the injury was actually on a. He was trying to make a tackle. And he was trying to step out of bounds. He was trying to dive for a tackle. It was a pick or a fumble.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And he pulled his, and he hurt himself. Okay. Should mention too, the Bears did not play Alshon Jeffrey in that game. They're also down Kevin White, so their offense is really taking a hit. I think you're going to see a lot of Matt Forte and a lot of Jeremy Langford in the next few weeks for the Bears. Now we also want to mention your guy Kiko Alonso, who had one of the plays of the season in the week one.
That's right.
He may be gone for the year now.
So the reports early were that he might have re-tore his ACL, but they're saying that that wasn't true. They're saying that it's partially torn ACL in that same knee, though, and they're saying that it could be 2 to 4 weeks. He's trying to get a second opinion to see exactly when he, you know, how long he'll be out for, sideline for. On top of that, Michael Kendricks left, so the Eagles are really decimated at linebacker right now. Jordan Hicks, I mentioned, was the culprit in the Tony Romo injury. He's going to have to see significant time now alongside D'Amico Ryans, who's coming back from a ruptured Achilles. So, yeah, injuries galore this week.
And that's what football – there's always a lot of injuries every season, and it's just part of football. We kind of mentioned that. It doesn't seem – when we say that, every time I say that now, it's just part of football. It seems kind of odd that we just deal with this this sport that just has guys' lives destroyed in one play. But we move on now to our studs, duds, and surprises.
That's right.
This is a weekly thing we're gonna do. So to start off with our studs, we had a lot of good players this week. Who'd you pick for your stud of the week?
My stud of the week. We spoke about some of these surprise teams, and we spoke of Oakland and their success offensively. My stud has to be Derek Carr. Derek Carr finished the game 30 of 46, 351 yards. That was a career high for him. 3 touchdowns, only the 1 pick. And he was able to lead his team down for a game-winning touchdown drive against that supposed vaunted Baltimore defense. You know, that was an impressive drive young in his career. And, yeah, he's my stud of the week. I hope that we get to see more of this going forward.
All right, my stud is a guy may not be known by most NFL fans, a rookie this season, Matt Jones, running back for the Washington Redskins. The Redskins were really, really high on this guy early on. Jay Gruden was calling him the next Marshawn Lynch.
Wow.
And he delivered. He 19 carries, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns against a very, very good Rams defense. And this guy like came out of nowhere. I think I had kind of thought that he may get more touches. He outrushed Alfred Morris.
Unfortunately scored my fantasy team.
He scored a touchdown early on, and that really was able to let the Redskins kind of go after Nick Foles and stay on that lead, and that was a huge surprise, I think, for the week. And for the Redskins, he was their key to victory on offense. He really propelled them. They scored 23 points, and he had 2 touchdowns there. So I expect big things from him going forward.
Rock. Next week, you think he's going to repeat that against a much worse front seven in the New York Giants they go up to face? What do you think? How's that running game going to pan out for Washington next week?
That's going to play right into the Redskins' hands, because they're going to want to keep the ball out of Eli's mitts. And Matt Jones is going to get a heavy dose of Matt Jones and Alfred Morris. No John Beeson back for the Giants yet. That defensive line still doesn't look very good. So that's exactly it's going to play right into their strengths. And surprisingly, the Redskins have had a good offensive line play early on this season. But our duds, we got to go to our duds. And with so many bad losses this week, there's a lot of duds to choose from.
That's right. I got to go with the New York Giants. This is the second week in a row that they've held a lead in the fourth quarter. Rob is smiling now because he knows his team capitalized on one of these. And they fell to the Atlanta Falcons 24-20. And my dud is the entire New York Giants team, because for whatever reason, they're up 20-10. There was a fumble by Eli that cost them at least 3 points in the Atlanta red zone. And on top of that, they didn't know how to handle the – because I think – and then on so he had that fumble, and then they were unable to work the clock. And then on top of that, they let Julio Jones – I mean, he's going to beat anybody at any time. We've seen that. Byron Maxwell knows that. But – he was able to catch a ball over Brandon Merriweather and Prince Amukamara, I believe, the cornerback. on a play. It's just, I mean, they just don't know how to manage these leads. It's unbelievable. I mean, I just want to quickly read a quote here by Odell Beckham Jr. He's just like, he said, we need to keep attacking. It's not 15, 35, 45, or 50 minutes. It's 60 minutes. And they completely missed the ball with that. They don't seem to understand that. And Tom Coughlin, he's going to be on the hot seat if they can't start capitalizing on the fact that Tony Romo's hurt and, you know, the best team in the division is, you know, is kind of hampered by injuries. So, yeah, my dud has to be the Giants for their inability to wrap these games up.
All right, and my dud this week, and this one was a little personal for me, but I got to go with Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. They were favored by, you know, I don't really know if going by a week two Vegas line is an appropriate way to judge a football game, but they were the most heavily favored team to win this week. They killed a lot of suicide pools. Drew Brees came out after the game. He was kind of speechless that he couldn't win the game. And this was a game that they needed to win. This was the home opener for the Saints at the Superdome. They had a close win, or not a close loss, but a closer game by the Cardinals the week before, and they just couldn't come bounce back. Brees was threw for 255, one touchdown, one interception, but you know this has to come down to him eventually, because he's kind of taken this on his shoulders that he can win these games for the Saints, and I don't know if he can't do it anymore, but he's certainly projecting that he still can, and it's not worked out. The Saints need to either go to a different direction. You know, the fact that he was really out-offensed by Jameis Winston was kind of embarrassing to him, and he should be embarrassed by that. That's a rookie quarterback, and he's, you know, Brees is – Winston said after the game, when I saw Drew Brees in the first time, I was freaked out. That was crazy. That's Drew Brees. And there's Winston playing a better game than he did. So my dud of the week was Drew Brees. I don't know, you know, he may be hurt as well. Reports came back he hasn't torn his rotator cuff, but he's still questionable to play this week. Yeah. This is not looking like a great season, great start for Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints.
All right, so I guess we'll move on to the surprises of the week. Now, Mitch, I'm going to let you start this one off. Who do you think is the surprise, or who's your surprise of the week?
My surprise of the week is a guy that I've always liked that was a little worried about his NFL career, but Giovanni Bernard.
Okay.
Comes out, he has 123 yards, no touchdowns, but he really propels that Bengals offense. Andy Dalton only threw for just over 200. But Jeremy Hill kind of came in last year and looked to maybe just steal his job from out from underneath of him. Hill comes in and has two fumbles early on for the Bengals. Right. Kind of lets the Chargers stay in it, and Gio comes into the game and has a great one for them. He's a guy that he's a different back than Hill. Like that, Hill's going to take a lot of his carries, but he provides something different. And the Chargers really weren't ready for it. I think the Chargers won that game more because of how they stifled the Bengals won that game for how they stifled the Chargers' offense. But I think Gio Bernard, I don't think they win that game without Gio Bernard going off for 123.
That's fair. Now, what do you think? Do you think that they're going to even the workload now between the two of them? Or do you see Gio maybe getting back that number one spot?
No, I think Hill's probably still got that one number one spot. They already do kind of do share the backfield a bit because like I mentioned, they add
50-50.
No, it's not 50-50. I think it'll be more, you'll see 50, maybe 50-50 in the first half. And depending on who's hot, they'll go to that guy. Because that's what happened early on in this one. They still went to Hill a little on, but once they figured out that Bernard was running so well, they go with the hot hand. I think they go with the hot hand in most games.
Okay, that's fair. No, that's a great one for surprise of the week. Now, my surprise of the week has to be the Buffalo Bills defense. Now, we both picked the Bills to win against New England. We thought it was going to be – we still thought, I believe, that it was going to be a close game, that the Bills would just edge them out. And at home – the Bills made it close at the end, but look, here are the stats. New England put up 507 yards of offense on a Rex Ryan defense.
Yeah.
Tom Brady passed for over 466 yards in total. I mean, it was bad. It was a really bad one here. 6.7 yards per attempt. I mean, they didn't even attempt to rush the ball. I guess they realized that, you know, like, we're not going to get the ball over this defensive front, so they didn't even attempt with any rushes with Deion Lewis or Bolden or anything like that. Yeah, I have to say I'm really disappointed with how they performed. They really just weren't able to stop this. I mean, New England really could have gotten even more. It's just that they kind of took their foot off the gas late, just assuming that you know, the large lead they had was enough. And I guess it wasn't until Buffalo kind of started making that comeback that they were able to shut things down. So, yep.
Yeah, they took their time adjusting that game because, you know, New England jumped to the final score of 40-32, but it really wasn't close.
Yeah, it's not indicative of what happened. Like I said, 466 pass yards for Tom Brady against the likes of, unfortunately, Aaron Williams ended up leaving in the ambulance, but against that secondary led by Stephon Gilmore and company, I did not expect that. That's not something. And Rex Ryan, he came out as soon as that, the first thing in that press conference, he came out and said, "This loss is on me." He got out coached by Bill Belichick, which happens to be the case a lot. I mean, these two have been going at it for a while.
He was talking a lot before the game.
And so were we. A lot of people picked the Bills to beat the New England Patriots, and I guess the Patriots, they used that as bulletin board material, and they capitalized. They, you know, they deserve the win. That's for sure.
All right, so we're going to go into our final segment of our Week 2 recap now. Our mini power rankings. We're not going to run down all 32 teams here, but we're going to be our top three early on. It's kind of hard to pick since we've only got two games so far, but we've kind of come with a similar approach to the top teams anyways. I've got as my top three, or my top team, is the Green Bay Packers. You have the same thing?
I do. Green Bay Packers.
And I think, you know, we've seen them come in without Jordy Nelson and do, you know, just fine. Mike Freeman for Bleacher Report wrote a great article the other day after the Packers win over the Seahawks, saying, you know, is Aaron Rodgers the best quarterback? And there's no real reason to believe that he isn't. He hasn't gotten all the numbers yet, but in terms of how he plays, how smooth he is, you know, he gives you no reason to believe that he's going to lose any games.
Aaron Rodgers, now, I know he had an injury-riddled season 2 years ago, but he hasn't thrown an interception at home since 2012.
Yeah.
Take that into consideration. I mean, the guy just does not turn the ball over. You saw that graphic during Sunday night where his touchdown-to-interception ratio is 4-1. That's incredible. The next person, I think, is maybe Tom Brady. I think his might be close to 2-1. That is astounding how great he is not being able to turn the ball over. And it's not as if – it's not like with Alex Smith, who doesn't have the pass attempts or doesn't take the risk that he does passing the ball. You saw that throw, that first touchdown throw to James Jones, that he fitted in just past Richard Sherman's grasp.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. He is –
And he
did
a great job. I think the – Sunday night anyways, the Packers didn't particularly block that well for him, but he did a great job of moving in the pocket, not taking hits.
That's
not,
right.
Not letting his, you know, every time the quarterback doesn't get hit, that gives the offensive line a little more confidence and lets them play a little better, and they're getting a lot better. And I think guys like James Jones stepping in, having big days, is without Jordy Nelson, that's huge for them.
I just got to say one more thing. It's just, with Aaron Rodgers, it's just, we've Collinsworth brought up the fact during the broadcast that we might be watching the best quarterback of all time. And look, there are huge names out there, deservingly so, but it's just he's able to do things that nobody else is able to do, that he can throw off platforms that nobody else can. You see, I mean, the comparison may be that Andrew Luck might be able to make the throws that he can, but he sometimes will have to reset. We see Aaron Rodgers throw balls in midair.
He loves throwing balls in midair.
It's unbelievable. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that he has to move sometimes out of the pocket just to be able to make those kind of throws. That's the difference between, I think, these great quarterbacks and these average to mediocre quarterbacks, because Sam Bradford on the Sunday afternoon game, he's a guy who, for whatever reason, the pocket would collapse underneath him, but he would just stay there. And I know he's not known to be a mobile quarterback, but move around, you know, try and get yourself open so that you can.
An extra second does
exactly
a lot in the passing game.
And, you know, I know I've been praising Aaron Rodgers from, you know, the beginning when we were doing the previews and stuff like that, but he just gives me so much material to use.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. And we go to another team, our number two team. We both have the same team for this as well. Guy, you mentioned Tom Brady and the New England Patriots there. They've come out absolutely on fire. Rob Gronkowski and Brady look unstoppable right now. I think that's the main connection that's really getting that offense going. We mentioned Deion Lewis. I think Deion Lewis is kind of become that Shane Vereen, Kevin Falk type of guy. Right. Even a little bit of Wes Welker in terms of the way he runs with the quick feet. I really like the Patriots right now. I think, you know, even though they are weak at some spots defensively, particularly at corner, we found, you know, no team has been perfect. The teams that we thought, like the Seahawks, that we thought were set across the board, they're not.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know what? With the Patriots, the only reason I don't have them one is just because I saw a big improvement by the Packers defense. So I feel like they're just a bit more of a complete team. The Patriots, though, I don't want to take anything away from their defense because they had 8.5 sacks on Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
8.5 sacks. So that defensive front, that front seven is a lot better than I thought it was. So I want to give them credit there. And like you mentioned, Gronkowski is an unstoppable force. I mean, you can't do anything to stop this guy. So Brady's going to always, as long as he's his target, that offense is going to be humming because it just opens up everything for Edelman and Amendola underneath.
Absolutely. And they've got, you know, that division doesn't look like they've got a win against the Bills now. The Dolphins don't look as strong as we thought they did. This team's looking like they're going to be cruising through another good season.
Well, the Jets are 2-0 as well, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that'll be a better game this year than it'll be a fun game for sure. I think it's good to mention, too, that the Patriots, like my third-ranked team, they're a well-coached team, and that makes a huge difference across the board.
Right.
So our third team, we have a little different of opinion here. So my third team, my number three team is the Arizona Cardinals.
Okay.
They put up 48 points on the Chicago Bears. And the reason I have them there is just the reason I just mentioned, their coaching of that team. They find ways to win. You know, if you look at that game, they put up 48 points. Carson Palmer had 4 touchdowns, but less than 200 yards. They find the ways each play, what's the best way to gain yards. They lose Andre Ellington. They bring in Chris Johnson. They don't really miss a beat there. They get a great special teams plays, like David Johnson taking a 108-yard kickoff return right from the beginning. They're just a team that does everything right, and they find ways to win games, and that's all you can really ask for a football team.
You know what? If this was extended to maybe 4 or 5 teams, they probably might be my 4 or 5 team. But for me, I got to go with the Denver Broncos. The only thing I want to say about the Arizona, the only reason I don't have them higher is just because the defenses they played. Chicago might have one of the worst defenses in the league, despite what I might have thought after week 1. And your New Orleans Saints, they're not great defensively either. So that's the only thing. I'd love to see them play a better defensive team.
Yeah.
And speaking of defense, the reason I have Denver so high is because of that defense.
Absolutely.
DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller coming off those edges. Wade Phillips has done an excellent job making a great defense even better. And Aqib Talib, Bradley Roby, Chris Harris Jr. in the secondary. This is a really, really well-coached defense. And this offense, Peyton Manning is still leading this offense. And I know that that's what the criticism has been, that the offense hasn't looked as sharp. But they played the Baltimore Ravens and they played the Kansas City Chiefs, two of the better defenses you would assume in the league. I would think. I know Baltimore gave up 37 points against the Raiders, but yeah, if Peyton can lead even an average offense, which I mean that's not asking much. I'm sure that they're going to get a lot better as the year goes along. Then I think that the defense will continue to be as elite as it has been, and I think that we're going to see the Denver Broncos well up in these standings. Wherever you look at power rankings, they're going to be at least in the top 5 for a good portion of this year.
Are you concerned at all that they've basically got 2 offenses combined into one right now? Or Gary Kubiak has that power run style, and Peyton Manning's got his hurry up. We saw both in action against Kansas City, but only Peyton's offense was really working. That's one thing that kind of bothers me about the Broncos is there seems to be some miscommunication between coaches and players.
So
maybe not some miscommunication.
Gary Kubiak, okay, yeah. So Gary Kubiak and Peyton Manning, they're 2 guys that want to win. I'm not worried about them finding a way to meld both ideals together. You can start off with Peyton's hurry-up offense and then slow it down with Gary Kubiak's run-first system. That's something that easily can be done. I'm not worried too much about that. It's just a matter of which one they want to start the games off with. And we've seen both times they've kind of tried to, you know, do a run first thing, and it hasn't worked. We saw them have to change that up against Kansas City and get to that no huddle offense that Peyton Manning, you know, has succeeded in all his career. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about that. Even if they have to switch mid game, I'm not worried about that. Both guys will just want to win. And Peyton Manning's not the guy. I know people think that he's, you know, they call him the field general and everything he's definitely welcome to, you know, criticism and anything anybody has to tell him. So
he's not like, it's like he's never run the ball. He's had games where his read has been hand the ball off, and he hands the ball off.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm not too worried about it. It's just a matter of finding out at what points in the game they're going to use what offense, I guess.
All right, and we'll see how that they go. See how that team does going forward. I think you're going to see kind of a mix as the season goes along. Hopefully, their idea is that by December, if Peyton's a little slowed down, that they can go to that run offense.
Exactly.
All right, and that's all the time we've got for episode 15 of Between the Trenches. Remember, you can check us out on Twitter. If you send us your questions, fantasy football, if you get questions about the show, we want to hear them. So at Between Trenches or on Facebook. We also have our website, www.betweenthetrenches.com, which is probably where you're listening to this right now. Thanks for listening to another episode of Between the Trenches. We all have another episode for you, previewing week 3 coming up in the next few days.
That's right. All right. Well, for Rob, Mitch, and myself, Dwayne, it's been a great show, guys. Great episode 15. See you next time.
Let me ask you a question. Who could possibly have it better than us?
Nobody!